You can't delegate digital transformation for your company. You and your executives have to own it. Executives need to engage, embrace, and adopt new ways of working with the latest in emerging technologies. And that's where we come in. Welcome to Embracing Change. The business world is changing at a faster pace than it ever has, and companies need to keep up. We interview the most interesting CEOs, CMOs, and other executives to talk about their challenges with digital transformation in their industry. This is Embracing Change, and this is your host, Gerardo Carrick.
Education is a topic that concerns us all. Today, my guest is Leo Schlesinger, CEO of Aliado Universidades. This Mexican group has revolutionized online education in a country where not everyone has access to local universities. We talked about how digital transformation is changing education at all levels, everywhere. Some of the topics we covered are the value of new technologies in the classroom, the importance of digital enrollment, and the educational possibilities generated by enabling immediate feedback between students and teachers. I am your host, Gerardo Carrick, and this is Embracing Change. Let's dive in.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Embracing Change, a podcast about digital transformation told from the voice of the people that lead those transformations. Today with us is Leo Schlesinger. Leo is the CEO of Aliado Universidades, which is a group based out of Mexico, private equity group that has done very, very interesting work in the higher education sector, and he comes with an amazing background too. Hi, Leo, how are you doing?
Hi, Gerardo. Thank you for the invitation to the podcast. Really happy to be here.
We're very happy to have you here. Leo, for the people that doesn't know you, maybe you want to give a short introduction about your experience.
Sure. I mean, I come from a banking and private equity background. I've been working in higher education for the past almost 7 years. And basically, what we aim to do is to provide more access to higher education that is of quality and relevant in Mexico. And I'll tell you more of the numbers as the podcast progresses, but there is such an opportunity here to make an impact both socially, and also it's an interesting business to be in as well. We've been doing this, as I said, I've been doing this for almost 7 years, and we're experiencing a very interesting time in terms of digital transformation, and I know that's your core topic, but in education, we are just at the beginning of this transformation.
Excellent. And by the way, just for our listeners, for full transparency, Leo and his group Aliat has been customers of our agency WSI in the past. So, you know, a couple of years ago, we did a very, very interesting project with Aliat Universidades. So I just wanted to get that out there, right?
So Leo, that was great work that you did, Gerardo.
Thank you so much, Leo. We enjoyed it. We really enjoyed it. And you know, one of the things that we enjoyed about it, on top of obviously the experience of working with your team, was getting a peek into what was happening pre-COVID in higher education in Mexico, which I think it's a prequel to what's probably happening in many, many places around the world. And I was very impressed with some of the transformation happening that I was frankly not aware of. So maybe, Leo, it'll be interesting for us to talk about what's happening in the market today in Mexico. Maybe if you can give us give the listeners a window into the challenges that you were facing even previous to COVID, right? Because you started this digital transformation before the acceleration.
Sure. Let me start from the context, the general context, and then we can go down to more specific into how the digital transformation has been implemented in Aliad. But in terms of the market in education in Mexico and in general, it's important to know that higher education has a direct correlation with the level of income of the population. So if you achieve a higher education degree, you will earn double that if you do not. So in that is true in Mexico and much of the emerging markets. So the more you progress in your education, the higher your income will be. So that's a path and a key to social mobility, and that is really important in countries like ours. It's important for the level of innovation in the country, the number of patents that you generate, the productivity of a country. In Mexico, it's also extremely relevant, and there is a direct correlation between the people that work in the informal sector and the people that have achieved at least a higher high school degree. So half of the economy in Mexico is informal, and there is a direct correlation with the level of education that you have. And there is also an interesting fact that if there is even a correlation to the life expectancy of the population, people who achieve a high school diploma or above live in average 5 years more than those than the people that do not. So the implications are vast in terms of the impact that higher education degree or an education we have in the quality of life, in the social mobility, even in life expectancy. Now, in terms of some of the data that makes this market. Less than 18% of the population in Mexico have achieved a higher education degree. If you compare to the OECD, it's 38%. So it's less than half of the OECD market. We are one of the...
And what is the OECD, just for the benefit of our listeners, what is OECD?
The Organization of the Developed Countries, which Mexico is kind of part of, because you may argue with whether we should or we shouldn't be there, but we're part of this group of countries, which the US is part of as well. But as a reference, it gives you a benchmark to compare against, and it tells you that there is much work to be done in terms of achieving, the education level that we should have. That's the people that have achieved a higher education degree.
Yeah.
But people who enter a bachelor's program, it's less than 30% of the population that could access. So two-thirds of the population do not access a higher education program. Only a third of them they do. And another thing is particular to Mexico is that this is a very unequal access. If you compare the top one-fifth of the population in Mexico, they have 8 years more of study than the bottom one-fifth. Mm-hmm. And they earn 20 times more. So that, like I said, there is a direct correlation between access, between the absolute numbers of years that you study, and the income that you generate. So for the country, this is such an important subject matter to develop a more equal and a more sustainable economy. Most of the people at the top of the pyramid, AB segment, the socioeconomic segment, they have access to higher education. Mm-hmm. The CD segment, which is the one that we target, which is 55% of the population, which is the mid to lower income segment of society, is the one that is being neglected the most. And that's the core of the Aliad target segment. This is the people that we want to provide access to. And all of the model and all of the innovation that we have brought is to serve them in the best way possible. So to provide them with access to higher education that is of quality and that is relevant as well.
Of course, of course. And that's really, really helpful to understand the context of how Aliad came to be, right? Because people would not know that Aliad is a new group that has been acquiring existing universities with very long standing traditions, but acquiring those universities and pairing them with a platform technologically innovation that allows them to expand their profile, right? So maybe you can tell us a little bit more about Aliad now, and then we can start talking about the whole process of digital transformation.
Sure, absolutely. Look, again, if we aim to serve the segment, the lower middle income segment of the market, we have a lot of restrictions in terms of how much they can pay for a higher education degree. And we want to provide access and quality at the same time. We looked at different educational models, and you mentioned the platform model is the one that we decided to implement, which is the one that allows you to provide both quality and access with a scalability, with a scale that provides us the ability to be efficient and to go to and access markets that normally cannot afford a higher education of quality. So what we do is, and you mentioned it, we acquire universities. We have acquired over 16 universities. And we, many of those, almost all of them, they are brick and mortar traditional universities that operate in a very traditional fashion. Many of them, they were family owned. And we integrate them into a common, scalable, efficient digital platform. So all of our universities operate the same, with the same programs, with the same systems, with the same processes, with the same management. They may have different brands because some of them, they've been operating for over 50 years. And so the social capital, the awareness, the top of mind that they have, the alumni base, it's worth keeping their brands, but they operate the same. So what it allows us is that we can invest in extraordinary systems, platforms, programs, content that is going to be distributed to a great number of students because of all of them, they operate in the same way. So it allows us to provide flexibility, pricing, options, modularity, etc., content, technology, excellent teaching, all of them based in the same processes and platform.
And you know what I found fascinating about getting, you know, learning more about what you've done with the you know, with that group is the fact that if you think about higher education, right? And you know, I'm gonna be preaching to the, you know, to I'm not gonna say anything new to you, but if you think about higher education, right? It's an industry that's been in a state of influx for the last few years, right? And if you look at the case of the United States in particular, it's an industry that has been suffering a lot because of the rising costs, the enrollment model, and many different variables that are making that a complex business, right? And one of the things that the digital transformation in general is doing for higher education, one is on the enrollment side, right? It's allowing universities to reach out beyond their geographies, right? And beyond, you know, the people that can actually go and study at the class, right? In a way that wasn't able before, and not only on the traditional courses, but also on special courses that address a certain needs, right? So to me, that's done directly and through aggregators, right? So that's one side of it that it's very interesting. On the other side is the whole aspect of artificial intelligence, right? And allowing universities to understand how to better serve their students, right? And how to use that data to create better outcomes for their students and better journeys for the students, right? On a third level, it has to do with the physical experience, right? You know, using all of this big data to be able to better monitor, better track, better provide services based on the flow of students. You know, there's so much innovation that could, you know, that digital transformation is bringing to schools that almost we can think that, the schools of the future, and meaning, you know, the very near future, I know you've done a lot of this on the Aliad front, but most schools are not there, right? And yeah. The schools of the future are going to be following a very similar model, I think.
Yeah, I mean, let me go back to something that is happening, and I want to make some distinctions that are more than semantic, so we can differentiate different players in the market and what they're trying to do and how we're evolving.
Okay.
First, I have to say that, of course, the industry is in a transition mode. I mean, today, the technology clearly is disrupting the model. Mm-hmm. The role of universities in some countries and some markets is being discussed and challenged. Cost, like you mentioned, in the US in particular, is being skyrocketing. And I will say much of that has no relation to the reality of education. So mm-hmm. much of the inflation of costs in the US, it's more to do with things that are in the periphery of education that have nothing to do with education. So
with the service,
rising cost of the football and coaches and the things that have, to me, very little to do with that real education. There is also a challenge in terms of how professions are seen in the next years and the job market, how this is evolving. So how a profession is going to look like in a couple of years, we don't know. Mm-hmm. And what skills do you require? And I have to say that the discussion about education is different, Gerardo, in different markets. In the U.S., much of the discussion about cost comes from the return on investment that you get out of the education. Mm-hmm. And not because you don't get the return, it's because the investment is so high. It's because the cost is skyrocketing so much. So it's the excessive cost that is bringing the discussion about the value of university education, which is not the same in the other market.
It's true. Here in the U.S., there's there's people arguing that sometimes how do they call them? It's not higher education, but it's trade education. Sometimes drives a high return investment.
Yeah,
for a segment of students.
And that's why I want to make that distinction, because the problem is not that you're not getting the return on education; it's that the cost is too high. True. And the cost is driven by things that are not related to real mm-hmm. education. In emerging markets, in other markets, really the discussion is not about the return on investment. Like I said before, you in terms of income, you get twice as much with a higher education degree that you do with the levels below. And the investment, it's not comparable to the one that you make in the US. So really the discussion in emerging markets, in Mexico in particular, is how do you provide access and quality to the segments that have been traditionally excluded. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes most of the discussion. And I will say that when you talk about trade education or training, and you confuse it with higher education, and it's because you have to make that trade-off. You cannot, when you cannot pay for education, you get training. Yeah. And the difference, it's more than semantic, is really training and trade focuses on developing skills. Mm-hmm. And education focuses on developing the person. Yeah. That in turn develops skills.
Of course.
But the core is how do you develop somebody to its full potential? You know, how do you provide them with the know why, not just the know how? Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. why this makes sense for your life? What are you gonna do? How you become a better person, a better citizen, a better community member? What you do with your life and how these skills that you acquire, which is mm-hmm. part of the education, help you to reach those dreams. So it will take you to be more employable, or will take you to start up your own company, whatever your dream is. But it gives you this whole framework for you to become all you can be. Mm-hmm. Training focuses on developing the skills that you require will make you more employable now. And education and training play this complementary game, if you will. Mm-hmm, I think education and higher education has a lot to learn from these platforms that you mentioned, from the Coursera, the edX, the Udacity, to be able to provide skills and credentialing in a more effective manner, lifelong. Mm-hmm, you know, not just within the time frame of your degree, but for the whole life.
Of course.
You know, but it's not one or the other, it's both. But you cannot, we should not confuse one with the other.
So that's a very good point. That is a very, very good point. And let me just take a step back and ask you from your point of view, what are the top challenges facing higher education?
Yeah. Well, like I said, I mean, technology change, costs, the role of the teachers, the evolution of the job markets, and the new skills that you have to develop. Mm-hmm. All of those are core challenges facing higher education. And we are in this transition phase trying to figure many of those out. Mm-hmm. And I will say that we have rediscovered the value of some of the old skills that in the university we need to teach, like learning how to learn. So mm-hmm. if we know that much of the content is going to be obsolete, mm-hmm. the key ability to develop is the ability to learn. So also understanding where you fit and where those skills fit in your plan, in your aspirations, in what you want to do with your life. Mm-hmm. If you see, one of the key challenges in education as well is the desertion rates. So the students that enroll in a program and they leave.
They don't finish.
And that is huge. And it is really important if you connect with the why of the person, why somebody wants to do something, and that makes sense and it has a meaning and it has a purpose, the retention rates go up.
Of course.
So that's another thing that we discover and that we understand, is that we need to connect both. So the know-how and the know-why makes, you know, they are very complementary in higher education. You cannot just focus on the know-how, because mm-hmm. if people don't know why they're doing what they're doing, they will leave you.
Of course. So I would love to then try to connect that back into what you guys have done from the perspective of digital transformation, right? Because you've touched on all of those trends and challenges from, you know, from I mean, obviously you do it in the physical schools through traditional education, but you've addressed all of those, or you've tried to address all of those for those students that are now being able to access your services, but might not be accessing them physically, right? So I guess how, I have in my mind, I have questions about what's the customer journey, and then once they become a customer, what's the, how is the experience when studying either hybrid or digital through your education platform?
Yeah, let me start by saying that all of these digital tools do not replace the human experience. They amplify it.
Okay.
And that not everyone has the capabilities or the desire to go full online 100% of the time.
Okay.
And that is very segment dependent. So for you and I that are of a certain age and that we have a certain experience and that we already have a postgraduate degree and that I think we have the motivation and the training and the capability to study fully online, probably we are quite suited to go and study a program that is 100% online. Mm-hmm. But if you put yourself in the shoes of the segment that we serve, which is some of the people that, again, many of them, they're the first ones to go to university. Mm-hmm. Kids leaving, the high school at 18, not really knowing and certain what they want to do with the rest of your life. I'm pretty sure that neither you or I were certain of what we were going
to do. No, for sure we did. We were.
For sure. For them, even more, that have all of these deficiencies in terms of the public education they got when they were kids, in math, skills, reading comprehension, etc. So studying 100% online might be extremely daunting and difficult for them. I'm explaining these two different and opposite segments, one that can fully study it and embrace it, and the other one that is, it will be very difficult for them to go 100% online.
Yeah.
And what we see is that digital, it's an enabler, but it doesn't replace, in many cases, what it requires from being in a classroom, being with other classmates, being able to experience and interact with the teacher, having a space to reflect and really understand what you've been taught. And what we see is that digital is evolving, is enabling this to be an omni-channel type of program. For some people, you'll be able to have much more of a digital experience. For some, it will be a blended and more, it will have a higher face-to-face component. And it will depend on the capabilities, on your restrictions that you have in your life. If you have to work to be able to sustain your studies, if you can only come at certain schedules, etc. So it's not one size fits all. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And digital is an enabler, but it doesn't replace. And I hope it never will, because I think human interaction in education is really to taking the best out of you as a human. So algorithms will help you for certain, but I don't think it replaces completely the role of a great, inspiring teacher.
Of course, I would imagine that as you described the different segments, there's a, you know, we know there's because of the rising cost of education, even if you're in a country like Mexico it's not experiencing the rising cost here, some of the segments that you're targeting, they still need to probably work. They cannot commit to a full-time education because they have economic demands, right? And I think that's becoming a reality around the world. So the modern day student is becoming a student that requires a flexible curriculum, right? And it requires a class schedule that it's servicing their terms, right? And I think all of these digital tools that we're talking about is allowing maybe a segment of students that otherwise would find it very, very hard to either to enroll or to succeed to be able to do it, right? And here I'm thinking about students that require flexible schedules, but it could be also students with disabilities, right? A student with a disability that doesn't allow them to go to school, or they cannot attend a class because maybe they have a hearing disabilities or visual disabilities. Suddenly, all of these platforms is allowing them to get trained or get an education and be able to have a better life, quality of life going forward, based on all of the studies and all of the numbers that you mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, right? So I think probably what we're talking about here is obviously education still needs to be face-to-face, or still a big element of it is the interaction with students, the interaction in a physical space with teachers, the reflection that brings to a student. But there's a slew of opportunity that's been opened up by technology to allow people that otherwise would find it hard to attend a college.
Yes, and what I will say, just to expand on what you just said, is that some people have the capabilities to go full online, and mm-hmm. there is a significant segment of them that and that's okay. Mm-hmm. For the segment that we cover, we require it to be blended. So part of that will be done through and augmented and made more efficient with digital tools, but they still require and they want and they expect a portion of their education, which is still significant, to be face-to-face. Mm-hmm. And they want that interaction, they crave that interaction. And one of the things that the pandemic made clear is that we're really looking, we're social animals. I mean, mm-hmm. us being in front of a screen, even though this may be extremely efficient, Gerardo, I would love to have it in front of you with a coffee or with a tequila or, you know, mm-hmm. and I know that we'll add texture and warmth to our conversation that this doesn't.
Yeah.
This is a good second option for that, and it's extremely valuable, but it doesn't replace.
Yeah.
We found out that social media is not social. You know, and in terms of the flexibility, that's the key word for our students. And it's not only flexibility of the schedules, it's flexibility of the channels. So mm-hmm. if you want to study online full-time, part-time, whatever that is, we'll provide it. If you need to work and study and you need the flexibility for that, mm-hmm. great, we'll provide it. Flexibility of location, that's part of our model. How we can have access centers that go beyond our campuses, so we can have a classroom that is close to where you are, and we go to very marginal communities to provide that access. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And flexibility of payments, so people can, if they cannot pay the 5 courses they have in a term, they can pay for 3. And mm-hmm. that means a 40% discount on what they're paying month to month. And it may take them a little bit longer, or they can catch up later, but that we adapt our programs to what they can. And we understand that higher education today, to be able to include more of this population that had been traditionally excluded, had to be flexible in that way.
What is very interesting as I'm listening to what you're saying is that everything that you're talking about makes me think that now everything centers around the needs of the student, right? I cannot talk about the past, right? But it seems to me that from moving from a rigid model of okay, this is the class schedule, this is the degrees that we offer, this is where you come and study it, to now providing all of this flexibility as a keyword that you describe, right? This flexibility is basically putting customer service at the center of the operation, right? And technology is enabling all of this to be able to deliver a better class experience, better education, better access, all of those things that you talked about. Still, you know, understanding that it's a hybrid model, right? I mean, we're still in higher education. We're still in the business of bringing people together and educating them for a future path. But technology is allowing all of this to happen in a way that it's more efficient
and amplified.
Yeah, it's more efficient for both sides, right?
Yes. Yes, to me, we use the term of digital transformation. To me, in education, is more about digital amplification rather than transformation. Oh. Mm-hmm. So it's how you amplify, how you complement, how you expand education. It's not about transforming education in terms of doing something that you were not doing before. It's doing it better, doing it more effectively, and amplify its impact. And I think that makes a lot of a sense today, especially, Gerardo, to be able to include people that were not able to study before. The reality in emerging markets is quite different to the one in the US, even though today I think the discussion in education, it's been brought about because of the cost issue that we mentioned mm-hmm. before. That has nothing to do with education. It has to do with other things that I think are distorting the discussion. But technology can really be a tool that will democratize education much further.
Yeah. So we're talking about blended education, right? Or hybrid, right? We're talking about digital access. We're talking about all of these things, but you talk a lot about this underserved segment that you guys addressed, right?
Yeah.
Can you bring this to life? Can you give me, can we put a name, an imaginary name and explain the situation and why this model serves that particular situation?
Sure. Let's think about Jose. Uh-huh. I think it's okay. Jose is the first in their family. There's three brothers and sisters, and he is being chosen to go to university. Most of their family today work in the informal sector. Mm-hmm. They have an aspiration for at least one of the kids to be able to have access to a university degree. They know that this can change their lives, and it will have also an effect in the whole family that is being tested and studied in community. They know that. Jose is quite scared today about actually accessing education. He doesn't know if he has the skills to make it. He feels the responsibility of having all of these resources that their family are bringing to him and him being the only one chosen to do it. So mm-hmm. what happened with their brother and sister that are not going to university, but Jose is going? Hopefulness or helplessness that that they believe that they're not, they're actually not certain that they can make it. And then Aliad comes, or a university like ours, or and he tells him, yes, you can do it. But to be able to do it, we're going to provide you with the tools and the skills and the flexibility so you can actually work and study. So you're not spending 3-4 years without earning a living. So you can complement and supplement your parents and your family resources to be able to study. That will provide you with the credentials and tools so to make you more employable even while you're studying, so you get a better income now. And we'll provide you with the tools that you can study 24/7. So you can actually study in your phone, so you can study in your laptop or your iPad or whatever it is that you have. Most of them, they don't have laptops and iPads. They have to study on their phones. We'll also have a 24/7 support system with tutors and mentors through our call centers and help desks, so you can ask questions and get the answers you, you need while you're studying. Many of them, they will have to study in the bus on the way to work. Many of them, they have to commute 1 hour, 2 hours. Sometimes even the transport cost can be as high as the tuition cost. Mm-hmm. If you add up the opportunity cost of labor in the while they're being commuting. So it makes a big difference for a population that has been traditionally excluded from the opportunities of higher education to have this flexibility, this access, and being of high quality and relevant to the skills that they need to develop for the future.
Yeah, absolutely. So could you have delivered that service to Jose without digital transformation? Impossible.
No. I mean,
That is a second that was created because of technology.
That was included by these technologies for certain. I mean, the ability for us to bring an access center or a classroom that it's supported by all this technology inside of our campuses, and to include rural segments of the population that do not have, you know, a campus close by. The ability to teach and enhance learning outcomes through these technologies for people that come with some serious restrictions in that their ability to learn. Yeah, I was mentioning about math and learning comprehension in others, and that they face all sorts of obstacles to be able to study. Mm-hmm. I think technology is an enabler.
It's an enabler. Leo, I'm very interested in understanding, I mean, because we've been talking a lot about the market, the segment, and education in general. I'm very interested in learning about the organizational challenges, right? In terms of capability building, in terms of culture. Can you tell me a little bit more about what you've seen there?
And I think the word that you mentioned, culture, is the most important one. Mm-hmm. More important, even though a restriction is the CapEx, because the investment that you need to make are significant, quite significant in the sector that we're in. And actually, they are so significant that for many, they will be impossible to make. They will not have the resources to invest in a digital transformation because it is quite expensive. So for us, that opens up a whole different line of business where we will provide those services to other universities or educational institutions, and we'll rent our services to them so they be able to digitally enable their programs and their services, etc. But more important than the CapEx to be able to succeed in this is the cultural transformation. is understanding that, especially in education, where we've been doing the same thing or similar thing for over 2,000 years. So the first academies from Platon and, you know, and the Greek academies happened over 2,000 years ago. And if you look at them, the teacher and the classroom really hasn't significantly changed from then to now. So now it's changing. And this transformation changes the role of the university, changes the role of the teacher, of the teacher, the actual activities that they make. So now you can really focus on where you add value the most, which is in the inspiration piece, which is in the connection piece, which is in the, you know, the teaching piece, rather than all of the other things that you were doing before that were more administrative in nature that you can automate right now. You can reach people that, that were excluded in the past. So there is a natural resistance, many of these things, because you need to retrain yourself. Providing a class online is different from providing a class face-to-face. The transparency, the exposure, the measurement, the, you know, it brings a complete different level of transparency to the job most of our teachers do. And that that requires some change management and requires people to do things differently. Things that were happening at campuses before now are happening at centralized service centers and health care, and they're being done digitally and centralized. So it's not a transformation in the sense that it doesn't change the nature of many of the things that we do, but it changes the where the, these are made and the things that you are actually focusing your time. What is really transformative in my perspective with these technologies is, and that is the true value in the future of these technologies, is that in a traditional class, Gerardo, let's say this is a class and there are many people here and you're one of the students, I don't know whether you're learning any of the things that I'm saying. I'm looking your head, and I believe that you are, but I'm not certain. Maybe I'll learn in 3 weeks' time when you do the exam that you didn't learn anything, or that you did, but that might be too late. And the great value of these technologies that is coming and is slowly being built into this educational revolution is that the platform learns how you learn in real time. And it's able, through these algorithms and through this artificial intelligence, to understand how you learn best and where your shortcomings are. So, and it's able to provide this feedback to the teacher, to the mentors, and to the student, and to supplement it in real time. So we don't have to wait 3-4 weeks until the exam comes, but now. And I think that's really the transformative aspect of this technology.
That's fascinating, right? Because there's almost a new set of skills for the digital faculty of the future, right? That has more to do with digital fluency, being able to use these tools in a way that it's still creative, in a way that it's still developing education, but also that it's allowing them to track how effective the education is going, right? And being able to adapt real time through all of the data analytics that that they're getting back from these systems, in order to better serve that customer, that it's a student. And there's something around digitalization and big data and algorithms, and actually even virtual reality, right? That would would allow higher education institutions to even train students
to face real life situations, right? Without having to experience them in person, right? Being able to train them into, you know, the same way sports teams are now doing it in preparation for games, right? So that's fascinating. I would assume that, is there a big emphasis now then in developing those skills with teachers? Because you cannot replace teachers, right? I mean, there's not enough teachers around to be able to, you know, you have to train all of this workforce. I mean, they're a very valuable workforce that has been, as you said, doing this for, you know, since the Greeks. It's been a very similar model, and now they need to adapt to all of these new possibilities.
Yeah, absolutely, Gerardo. I mean, there is a combination on all of the above. There will be some teachers that are better placed just to do face-to-face. Mm-hmm. And this is an omni-channel model where they will have a place to do that. Mm-hmm. Some of the teachers will have to adapt. Some will not adapt and they will leave, and we will have to. But we aim to train as many, and certainly anyone that is willing to commit and, you know, and believes in the model and wants to learn these skills, will give them the chance, and that's mm-hmm. what we do. So it's all of the above. Some will adapt, some will be trained, some will have more natural capabilities to do this and be extremely good online. Some of them, they will not. And there will be better place to be doing this in face to face. Some will leave, so it's a combination. But for certain, our intention is to try to provide to anyone who's willing to make the effort and learn to give them the chance and the tools and train so they be able to be successful in this model.
Sure.
And I think there is no way back, Gerardo. I mean, no, this is no the future. And I think anyone who's in education right now should understand that these are the skills that they need to develop.
Of course. And just as a wrap up from this segment, you know, there's obviously the acquisition element, the student access element, then the cultural element, the technology element. You know, there's so many aspects that the big data, there's so many aspects to digital transformation that are showcased in education in particular, that I think it's one of those verticals, one of those service industries that is really having to go through this transformation at an accelerated pace. I have two more questions, because I know I'm conscious of time, but I have two more questions that follow up to this, which is, you know, the first one is, what lessons are there from the pandemic in terms of digital transformation, right? And, you know, everybody I talk to tells me, you know, the pandemic, what it did is it basically accelerated our digital transformation plans that were laid out for the next 5 years into 1 year, right? We just had to tackle everything immediately. Was it the same for your industry? What have you learned?
Look, I mean, from a digital transformation, what this done is this accelerated the pace of transformation for, you know, in many years. I mean, It I don't think it changed the direction of where we were going. It just made it go faster. Mm-hmm. And thank God, and I think thanks to my team and the vision we had from many years ago, we believe that was the direction we should be going. So it actually, from that perspective, it just accelerated many of the things that we were doing anyway. Mm-hmm. But From the other side, like I said before, this amplifies what we do rather than transform what we do. There are some transformative elements to it, but probably the the media and I will say the communication aspect of it makes emphasis on the things that change more, but more of it, I think, will remain in terms of the true purpose of education, even beyond digital transformation. So to me, it amplifies more than change. It helps you do the things that you were doing better, faster, you know, and reach more people. And I think that is inevitable. But from the other perspective, we also found, Gerardo, that we are human beings, social beings, that we crave interaction, that we crave connection, that education has a lot to do with that personal interaction as well, to finding purpose, meaning, and the know why we're doing things rather than just the know how. The other thing, I think, it is very clear that through all of these technologies, and it's extreme in the case of social media has very little social to it. And I think education has regained and refound this purpose in the human connection. And all of us that went through university, the things that remember the most are those things. You know, the classmates that you made, the first girlfriend that you had, that's where you had them, the meaning that you found through these deep conversations and spaces for reflection that university provides. And what COVID did is accelerated all of this change, reconnected us with the true, you know, purpose of the university and how it leads together. And it doesn't replace, it's not being replaced by technology, but it complements it. And I think that that's extremely valuable. We all want to go back to that restaurant, to that, you know, the Uber Eats doesn't replace a restaurant, the Netflix doesn't replace completely the theater experience. We want, it's an omni-channel experience that we're looking for. It's not digital, it's omni-channel. And digital is a big component, but it's not the only component of it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And especially for the age group of people going to college, I mean, that's an age group where you're still defining who you are, you're still defining who your crowd is, which tribe you're part of. And I have a son that just started college this year, and coming out of the pandemic, it's been so transformative to him to be able to go to a campus and be social again, because they spend a year and a half not being social. So I totally understand what you're talking about, especially for that age group. It's uber important because they're still alone, right? Maybe for people like you and I, where, you know, that we are at a different stage in our lives. Maybe you have a partner, maybe you have a family, maybe that is now your space, and you can do a little bit more of the digital interaction, and that's fine. But for most students, this is the age where they need to be out there, they need to be connecting, they need to be making lifelong friends. So I totally get that. Leo, finally, what is in your point of view, how does the future of education look like in the next 5 years? What's going to be happening?
Like I said, I mean, to me, it's going to be omni-channel. It's going to be adapted to the realities and the needs of the student. The flexibility is something that we talked before, I think, is key to be able to provide when and how the person requires it. Not losing sight that it's not just, it includes, but it's not just the development of skills, but it's the development of the person that requires those skills to be able to do something with them. So, so be able to work with our students, for them to find that dream that they have that can take them to study, that to work, to startup, their own venture, whatever that is. I help them find that in providing the best skills for whatever that dreams is. They may come from engineering, they may come from psychology, they may come from, I don't know, nursing, whatever it is. You may, the different tools in your garage to do whatever it is that you require to do. And in terms of the channels, it will be digital, it will be face-to-face, it will be full-time, it will be part-time, and it will and really will be tailored to what it is you require at the point in life that you are in with the capabilities that you have right now. So to be able to do that, you need to build that platform and infrastructure. Universities that are not able to invest in this will be left behind. So I think to me, it is quite clear that that's the future. And I think it's going to be exponential in the rate of change. And we need to be ready to embrace that future very fast.
Yeah. That's true. And it's very powerful that the schools that do not embrace that future will be left behind. I think it's the same for all industries. We see the same with all industries. I mean, I come from the entertainment industry where the companies that did not embrace streaming were left behind by there's a new expectation and set of behaviors. And set of expectations by the future customers of these universities that if are not addressed, you know, they're just not gonna invest their money in those schools, and it's just the reality of business right now. Anyway, Leo, this has been very very great conversation. Really enjoyed it. Obviously, you have a wealth of knowledge and experience in this industry, and what you guys have done in Mexico with Aliat, with Grupo Aliat, has been very very impressive. And the fact that you're serving a previously underserved market, I mean, that's very commendable too. So I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for spending some time with us, telling us about your digital transformation experience.
Thank you, Gerardo, and thank you for having us here and being able to share our experience. And always great to talk to you.
Thank you.